Last week we finished our series looking at the classic hymns, and we were encouraged to see God's willingness to sacrifice on our behalf and to serve us as evidence of God's greatness, and to seek that kind of greatness in our lives as well. This week we start looking at a series of the key ministries of Jesus. What are the things that Jesus did over and over again, and how can we pattern our church and our lives on those key ministries? You know, last month we started a 2-year commitment to a whole church discipleship program called 24 to Double, and we watched that video. Like 60, 65 people came to that, and we're going to keep watching one video a month for 2 years, although we only had the food to bribe you last time, or we don't have food to bribe you the rest of the time. The next video is actually next week. We'll be looking at church vision in Ficklin Hall after this service if you want to join us. But in those videos, we will see over the coming months that they recommend organizing our church around these key ministries that we will be walking through. These are the things that should be the top-level stuff, not three levels down in the committee structure. It should be the top-level stuff. And these are also the key opportunities for people to volunteer in the church and make an impact. So if you care about this church, this is the series for you. If you want to have an impact on our community, this is the series for you. If you are hurting or questioning and want a way forward, this is the series for you. If you want to just coast along in faith and have Jesus not demand anything from you, this is not the series for you. Luke chapter 19. If you are able, please stand for the reading from the gospel. Jesus entered Jericho and was passing through it. A man was there named Zacchaeus. He was a chief tax collector and was very rich. He was trying to see who Jesus was, but on account of the crowd, he could not, because he was short in stature. So he ran ahead, climbed a sycamore tree to see him, because he was going to pass that way. When Jesus came to the place, he looked up and said, "Zacchaeus, hurry and come down, for I must stay at your house today." So Zacchaeus hurried down and was happy to welcome him. But all who saw it began to grumble and said, "Jesus has gone to be the guest of one who is a sinner." Zacchaeus stood there and said to the Lord, "Look, half of my possessions, Lord, I will give to the poor. And if I have defrauded anyone of anything, I will pay back 4 times as much." Then Jesus said to him, "Today salvation has come to this house, because he too is a son of Abraham. For the Son of Man came to seek out and save the lost." This is the word of the Lord. So thanks be to God. You may be seated. As we mentioned earlier in the service, it has been a busy few weeks on the natural disaster front for the United States, and it looks like it still will be for a few more days. Fires, hurricanes, flooding, you name it, we've had it. And in particular, Hurricane Harvey happened to roll along, over, and through a place that I used to live, Port Aransas, Texas. Now, Port Aransas is on one of the barrier islands near Corpus Christi, and as a barrier island, that really just means it's a patch of land only slightly higher than the ocean, which can be problematic with a storm surge and a deluge of rain, not to mention catching the eye of the hurricane pretty much on the nose. Now, my family have made a few runs down to Port A to try to help with the recovery efforts, and there's kind of 2 ways to help with recovery efforts. One is to load up, everything you can think of that they might need in your car, your truck, your trailer, whatever you've got. Bring everything you think they'll need down there as quickly as possible. You can get boots on the ground pretty quickly that way. But in this case, we knew one of my brother's friends is helping with coordinate the recovery. So my brother called him and asked what they really need, and he said firewood. Come again? Not 2x4s to rebuild a wall. Not plywood to patch people's broken roofs, firewood. Well, it turns out, I don't know if you knew this, but it's true, people need food. I read it on the internet last week. And my brother's friend had managed to gather up several large barbecue smokers, and they needed firewood to keep them going because they were just cooking everything they could as quickly as possible and feeding it to all of the people on the island. But they were running out of firewood to keep the smokers going. There's no power, there's no other resources. This was the way to feed the island. So my brother had to scramble because firewood in Texas in September, not exactly a hot commodity, pun fully intended. But he managed to get half of his trailer filled with firewood, got the smokers to keep going, and the fine people of Porte enjoyed cuisine far better than the average hurricane recovery fare. But tell me this. Let's imagine that you were going to do that first way of recovery help, that you were just going to load up everything in your car and head down there with everything you could think of. Would you have brought any firewood, let alone half a trailer full? Well, if you want to say yes right now, I want you to check your pants to see if they're on fire, because you're probably lying. And if you happen to watch my video this week, you heard a similar story about what happened in Nepal, and I won't tell you that now, but find someone who watched the video. It's a pretty compelling image. But whenever there's a disaster, natural or otherwise, it's almost impossible to know what the locals really need unless you ask them, and unless they trust you enough to actually tell you what they need. It's almost impossible to know from a distance, without a conversation, without a relationship. There's some very interesting research going on in Africa right now to find out the most effective way to donate and to help people. In one village, they're giving every person in the village a monthly stipend of cash, and they're going to do it for 12 years, no strings attached, just to see what the long-term impact of that is. Very fascinating. And it's interesting to see how people have used this guaranteed money. Like, there's one entrepreneur who had always wanted to start a logging, business, but it takes years for the trees to get to the right size. He never could have done it without being able to buy those trees. Another family is using the income to send their daughter to school. They couldn't have afforded it. And the most interesting one to me is Duncan Odero. From the mouths of babes. So Odero was one of the brightest boys in his village until eighth grade, and that's when he suddenly developed seizures. And now he's a young adult, he's a young man, and several of his needs are very predictable. You could have guessed that he would need to spend some of that income on his medications instead of relying on friends and family. But some of his other needs would have been impossible to see from across the ocean. You see, Odero wants to be useful. He wants to prove that he can be independent. He wants to support himself. But whenever there's a job, people are afraid to hire him. They don't want him to, what if he's on a ladder and he has a seizure and falls off? So he never gets hired. He doesn't have an opportunity to have an income other than this monthly stipend. And that has some side effects. And let me demonstrate by way of analogy. On the geek websites that I visit, and I know you're surprised to hear me say that sentence, there's a pretty common exchange of insults every day. This happens multiple times. It all starts with someone making a pedantic comment about how stupid someone was for not noticing a tiny, obscure technical detail of something they shared. And then it escalates quickly, and it always ends with some comment like, well, let me know when you move out of your parents' basement and get a real life. The caricature of geeks is that we are socially inept, and living in our parents' basement is the quintessential example of that. Are you with me? I can say this because I'm a geek. In the same way, it was socially isolating for Odero to have to live with his family, to have to subsist on their generosity. And so he felt isolated and ashamed. Even when his brothers built him his own hut on his parents' land, he still didn't want to invite anyone over because he had zero furniture. They would have to sit on the ground. So one afternoon, shortly after these payments started, a little white taxi pulled up to Odero's hut and started unloading a sofa set. And so with a smile as wide as the continent, Odero started inviting everyone over from the village to come and have a seat on his new furniture. Of course, it only came with the wood frame. He's still trying to get the cushions, but it's an upgrade. But unless you knew Odero very well, you never would have guessed that he needed, in some cases, more than his medication. He needed furniture more than anything else, because that opened the door to relationships, to self-worth, to being a part of his community. Whether it's firewood or furniture or anything in between, it's almost impossible to know what people really need from a distance. Unless you happen to be Jesus, that's cheating. He was able to spot Zacchaeus from far away up in that tree, and he knew that Zacchaeus, he needed to hear something. So Jesus said to him, "Zacchaeus, hurry down from that tree. I must stay at your house today." And why did Zacchaeus need to hear this? Well, if we skip forward a few verses, we see that all who saw this began to grumble and said, Jesus has gone to be the guest of one who is a sinner. And so we see Zacchaeus' problem was that he was a pariah. He was an outcast from his people, hated even, far more isolated than Odero in his African village, because Zacchaeus took a job as a tax collector. The closest analogy I could think of would be Zacchaeus was viewed kind of like a Nazi collaborator in occupied France. That's how hated he would have been. He was with the Romans. In fact, I can't think of anyone in the United States who could come and worship in our building and make us as uncomfortable as the Jewish people were with Zacchaeus. And whoever would make you uncomfortable to have sitting next to you, Zacchaeus, far, far worse. So Jesus knew that Zacchaeus had a need, a deep need. And Zacchaeus knew that too. He was willing to endure even more scorn just on the off chance that Jesus could help him. And we've got the IRS, right? Things were a little different back in Zacchaeus' day. There were more swords involved. But the IRS sometimes does audits of people and organizations. This is generally not considered a pleasant experience. No one's going to come up to you and say, I'm getting audited tomorrow. So imagine that you're getting audited by the IRS, and you know they're pouring over these tiny financial details and chastising you for not saving every receipt for the last 7 years. And then after several days of this nuisance, you get the all clear. But a couple days later, you see that same IRS auditor is up in this tree out here with binoculars. Now, hopefully, first you look and see if there's like houses or apartments and he's a peeping Tom. You want to make sure about that's not happening first. But after that, what are you going to think about this auditor? Is that going to make you respect him more, seeing him, a grown man climbed up in a tree with binoculars? Probably not. You might think he's a little weird. Zacchaeus is not going to be viewed more favorably once people see him up in this tree. He's going to have even more negative stories told about him, but he's willing to endure it on the chance that Jesus might have something to offer him. Because Jesus was a known friend of sinners. Jesus was even known as a friend of at least one tax collector, Matthew the Apostle. So Zacchaeus was thinking, if he can be friends with Matthew, if he can save a woman caught in adultery, if he can heal the lepers and the blind, then maybe he can help me too. Here's why this matters today. Because anyone who walks through the doors of First Pres Littleton or any other church, they're thinking something very similar to Zacchaeus. Maybe Jesus can help me too. You see, people don't generally come to a church for the first time because everything in their life is working out great, and they just woke up this morning and thought, I want to have someone read the Bible to me. That's not really the reason. You can get that on TV if you really want to. When someone comes to our church for the first time, it's because something is off. Something is wrong. Something is missing. Something needs the presence of Jesus. Some come because they are hurting, physically, spiritually, emotionally. Some come because they are lonely. Some come because they are starting a family and they know they're about to get in over their heads, and they're right. Some come because they've lost someone or because they feel lost themselves. People come to a church because, like Zacchaeus, they are hoping that Jesus can help them. And that means that, like Zacchaeus, the faithful church folk might find them uncomfortable. Because it's not easy to interact with someone who's hurting. Exchanging pleasantries is not probably high on their priority list because they're hurting. They're in need right now. I used to work with people who had been burned by the church, and we were helping to reconnect them. And almost universally, their story of being burned by the church was when they were going through their most painful life moments, and their faithful church folk at their church treated them with scorn or with judgment. Instead of embracing them in their hardest time, they were left out to dry because they were hard to be around. Zacchaeus was right there too. And notice Jesus didn't tell Zacchaeus, hey Zacchaeus, get down from that tree and I want to tell you everything you've been doing wrong. He didn't say that. Instead he said, I must have dinner with you today. He showed extra compassion when Zacchaeus was in his most difficult time of need. And so as we look at these key ministries of Jesus, an invitation to relationship is one of the key ministries, an invitation to relationship. Let's start off with the word invitation. Did Zacchaeus ask Jesus for help? No. Now, he climbed a tree. That's pretty weird, a little noticeable, sent out the vibes a little bit. But he didn't ask for help. Jesus invited him. Jesus took the first step. Jesus knew he had a need, and so he invited Zacchaeus. And that invitation was to a meal. It was to a relationship. Now, Zacchaeus did change his life. You know, he offered restitution, gave away half of his money to the poor. Anyone want to sign up for that today? He gave away four times whatever he had damaged anyone. He radically changed his life, but that didn't come before the dinner invitation. His life transformation came about because of that relationship, not before the relationship. Now, here's what not to do if you want to copy Jesus' invitation. Let's imagine you know someone like Zacchaeus who they could use some help. Don't go to them and say, you know, I know your life is really messed up right now, and Jesus can probably help you at First Pres Littleton. That's probably not going to be very effective. But let's say you know someone that's moved to this area to get closer to their grandkids. Maybe you could invite them to the senior lunch to have a good meal, some good conversation, and an interesting program. That is an invitation to relationship. Or next week, we have our Music Dedication Sunday. If you know anyone who likes beautiful, uplifting music, invite them next week, and that is an invitation to a relationship. Or if you know a young family that is looking for a church, it might be easier, rather than inviting them on a Sunday, in about a month, we're going to put together a young family's picnic, a potluck picnic in October. That's a lot easier to invite someone to that relationship, to meet other families, rather than inviting them on a Sunday. If you know someone who's an empty nester, they're feeling like they want a church that meets their needs, not the church that met their kids' needs. Well, how about inviting them to serve with you at the community dinner or something else, a place where you get to make a difference now that your kids aren't your 24/7 job and you get to meet people as well. That's an invitation to relationship. Invitation to relationship was one of the key ministries of Jesus, and lives were transformed because of what happened after that. Sisters and brothers, Jesus sums this up himself elsewhere in the Gospels. He says, "It is not the healthy who need a doctor, but the sick. I have come not to call the righteous, but sinners." Or as Jesus says at the end of our text today, "I came to seek out and save the lost." And so if we are going to reach more people in the name of Jesus, then the people who actually want to listen aren't going to be the righteous people who have everything together. It's more likely to be the people who are wondering, like Zacchaeus, if Jesus can help them. But that might mean that they aren't as clean cut as you would like. That might mean that they don't look just like you. That might mean that they don't know the proper way to act in the sanctuary, however you want to define that. I've said this before and I'll say it again. We are meant to be a hospital for sinners, not a country club for saints. Hospitals are not always pretty, but they're the ones staying open in the hurricane, not the country clubs, because they have work to do. They're doing so much more to help. A hospital, though, does have to get to know the patient before treating them. If you walk into a hospital and they don't even talk to you and try to offer you treatment, you probably want to go somewhere else. It's only through relationship that we can actually know if someone needs firewood like Port Aransas, or furniture like Duncan Odero, or forgiveness and inclusion like Zacchaeus. And so my prayer for us, as we try to be a church like Jesus, may we be a church where our community thinks, they might get who I am. I might be able to find what I need there. That would make us a church like Jesus. Amen.